Support for this podcast comes from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative, connecting communities with the resources, infrastructure, and networks to ensure a vibrant local free press.
From KVPR in Fresno, this is Central Valley Daily. It's Wednesday, July 8th. I'm Sarith Hawk. Domestic violence is a major contributing factor to homelessness.
So if you're dealing with housing insecurity and also are in an abusive relationship, that whole experience might send you back to the situation you were in before.
We take a closer look at this cycle of violence in the Central Valley and the chronic barriers victims can face in finding help. But first, these headlines. The prison company, CoreCivic, has sold two of the largest immigration detention facilities in California to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, including one in Kern County. Nigel Duara, with our California newsroom partner, Cal Matters, has the details.
CoreCivic sold its Otay Mesa Detention Center in San Diego County and its California City Detention Facility in Kern County in a deal that closed July 2nd. The company reported the news in a letter to its investors on Monday that also confirmed CoreCivic is set to rake in around $1.1 billion from the deal. Up until now, the company owned and operated the facilities on a contract with the federal government. An unsigned Immigration and Customs Enforcement memo says the new model would, quote, allow ICE to create an efficient detention network by reducing the total number of contracted detention facilities in use. CoreCivic also disclosed it's having ongoing talks with DHS about selling the federal government additional detention facilities.
That was Nigel Duara. Masses of people were seen in the streets of Tehran this week for the state funeral of Iran's supreme leader Ali Khamenei, who was assassinated by the U.S. back in February. While tens of thousands of mourners took part in the procession, some Iranians here in the valley expressed a different viewpoint. Dr. Mehdi Qajar, a Fresno physician, criticized al-Khamenei and the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, or IRGC, as a dangerous regime responsible for the deaths of thousands of protesters in January.
Who the United States eliminated on February 28th was a mass executioner, was a mass murderer. He was not the head of a state that was chosen by the people. He was the head of the IRGC.
Qajar doesn't think the death of Ali Khamenei and the ongoing war have curbed the IRGC's power. The California High-Speed Rail Authority is requesting more money from the Federal Railroad Administration after the agency pulled $4 billion in funding last year. The High-Speed Rail Authority Board said it needs the money to complete construction in the Central Valley, according to the Fresno Bee. The Trump administration has been at odds with the rail project over its delays and cost overruns. Fresno State will publicly launch its first ever AI supercomputing center on Thursday. The university says the supercomputing center aims to provide technical support and accelerate innovation in the food and agriculture sectors in the Central Valley. This initiative stems from a partnership between Fresno State, F3 Innovate, and the San Diego Supercomputer Center at UC San Diego. F3 is a financial supporter of KVPR.
KVPR's vehicle donation program brings in thousands of dollars each month to support the news and information you rely on. If you've got a car, truck, motorcycle, or boat you're no longer using, please consider donating it. The process is easy. We'll tow it away free of charge, KVPR gets a check, and you'll get a receipt for your taxes. Find out more at kvpr.org/cars or call 855-277-2346.
And now to our main story. Domestic violence and homelessness are often part of the same cycle of violence. And studies show it's women and children who are disproportionately affected. A new investigative series highlights this issue here in the Central Valley, focusing on the services available and the populations most impacted. It's part of a project from The Intersection, a health reporting website managed by the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative. Megan Myskowski is the author of that reporting. I spoke with her about the chronic risks domestic violence victims face and why resources can be scarce.
I think domestic violence is tied, especially with like housing insecurity, because, you know, a lot of people who are in that situation who maybe have a partner who is abusive or a family member, they might also be dependent on that person. And so that means if they want to leave, they might not have the resources. They might have been prevented from getting a job or saving their own money, or sometimes even, you know, having a decent credit score. And that means that there are other options. You know, they might have to leave and kind of go into like this unknown space. Like they might be in a shelter, they might be on the street, they might be crashing on people's couches, but it might not necessarily be an option for them to just go and find another place to live right off the bat.
And you actually looked at the correlation between these two in California specifically. How widespread is that here?
So in the reporting, I talked about a UC San Francisco study that showed that I think it was about 10% of people who they surveyed who were experiencing homelessness in California had experienced domestic violence or intimate partner violence. So it is something that a lot of people who are living on the street have experience with. And even I can say, like, anecdotally, when I've talked to people who are living on the street, I think there are a good number who will say that that is a part of their story.
And it seems like it is a widespread problem. And what your reporting focuses on is that the services to treat it or to help people are pretty limited. At least in our area, you focused on the Marjorie Mason Center in Fresno. Can you tell us how services work there and what makes it unique in Fresno?
Yes, so the Marjorie Mason Center is unique because it works specifically with people who are experiencing both domestic violence and housing insecurity. And so the way that they handle that is by, you know, trying to support people in ways that they might not necessarily be supported in other shelters. Like, for example, a lot of shelters for people who are unhoused have big communal spaces. And, you know, I think there has been a lot said about like how positive or negative that is for people on the whole experiencing it. But if you have, you know, the experience with trauma, the experience with violence that like many of the people who Marjorie Mason Center serves has, that can be a lot and that can prevent you from taking advantage of those services. So one of the things that they do, which is also, you know, why these services can be so costly, is that they'll make sure that, you know, each family that comes in has their own room to stay in. So they're not sharing it with people they don't know. They have privacy, and that can be really important to the people who are getting out of a violent situation. They also provide therapy services for adults, for kids. They help with housing, help people to try to find housing. They really do a pretty widespread number of things for people who come in and are looking for their services.
Yeah, it seems like a really important service in our area. You report that Fresno County has one of the highest rates of calls to law enforcement for domestic violence, but there's only 40 beds available at the Marjorie Mason Center. Is that right?
So 40 rooms. There's multiple beds per room, but each of those rooms that would hold a family. So essentially, they can help 40 families at a time, which also means that they kind of have to keep those stays short. They told me that they have a lot of demand for their services. They have more than they can really meet with the resources that they have. And so a lot of times people are only staying there for about 30 days at a time.
Wow. That doesn't seem like enough. What can be some of the long-term effects then for women who are really only getting short-term care that they need in a place like Marjorie Mason Center?
Yeah, so we talked earlier about the financial reasons why, you know, someone might be facing housing insecurity mm-hmm. if they are dealing with abuse at home. And even just to back out, like, I think as people living in California, we know that it's not necessarily easy to find a place quickly that's affordable and meets all your needs. You know, if you think about a family that's maybe got a couple kids and you want to be close to their school. Maybe they've got a pet and they're looking for a place that's going to accept that pet. And then you talk about the, you know, the financial hardships we were talking about before, where maybe they haven't been able to have a job and they don't have great credit. They don't have, they haven't had access to their own money. All of that makes it pretty hard to find a place to live in 30 days.
So that leads us to another big aspect of your reporting, which is that you got on the ground and actually saw the impacts in homelessness. You talked to one woman who was living on the streets of Fresno's Tower District. She was also a victim of domestic violence. So what were those specific barriers for people when they're trying to access services when they're already on the streets?
You know, I think one of them, and the person you're talking to, you're talking about in specific, Nova, she told me that she's been on wait lists and she's kind of experienced firsthand that there's a huge demand for this. And there isn't necessarily the services to meet the demands. Another thing that she told me is that, you know, she's worked with a lot of different individual people from different organizations or departments or whoever, you know, caseworkers who are sent out to work with individuals on the street. Like she, you know, feels like sometimes she gets comfortable with a person and then doesn't see that person. And maybe there's a new person, maybe there's not another person. But from what I've, you know, heard from other people on the street or who work in that field, that's like not common, that's not uncommon, because this work is also really difficult and has a high turnover rate. So there are like a lot of different factors that go into what's difficult about getting help, whether it's, you know, how much is actually out there, what it actually looks like, the prospect of even getting into a home. I think if you go through all of this to reach out for help, which is not easy, and then find out that there's not really something waiting for you on the other side, that can be really demoralizing. And it's actually pretty common for people to go back to abusive situations. So if you're dealing with housing insecurity and also are in an abusive relationship, that whole experience might send you back to the situation you were in before, and also might send you there with a little less hope that if you try again, something will come of it.
And real quick, I also want to mention the last part of your series, which focuses on the farm worker community and the women who experience domestic violence there. What are some cultural challenges that they may face that we may not even realize in seeking help?
You know, I think one of the things that they brought up that really stuck with me is just the element of isolation. And I think that exists in a lot of these situations. But, you know, they're talking about people who, you know, might be worried about their immigration status. And so that might keep them from calling the police, or they've had, you know, negative experiences with law enforcement. That might also keep them from calling the police. Or, you know, they also work with people who speak indigenous languages. And because that's not as common, it's really easy for people in those communities kind of fall between the cracks, because they don't have the same access to the services because they don't speak the languages that are most common, like English or Spanish, that the services are provided in. And yeah, I think that's also a really interesting piece of the work of the group that I talked to.
Megan Myskovsky, independent journalist, thank you so much for being here and sharing your reporting with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You can read all these articles on The Intersection at theintersectionreports.org. Megan's articles were produced as a project for the USC Annenberg Center for Health Journalism's Domestic Violence Impact Reporting Fund. And that's today's show. Today's episode was produced by Jonathan Linden and KVPR with support from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative. I'm Sarith Hawk. Find the latest local news anytime at kvpr.org.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.